Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
Good evening, White Sox fans. It is Wednesday, June 25th. And before we get rolling here, I have to apologize if the sound quality on my mic is not great today, because it's apparent that we can't get through a week without having some sort of technical difficulties here. Pretty much par for the course since we've started doing this. But my cord for the audio is going to go bad, even after I tested everything just minutes before we started. Decided it wanted to crap out on me right as the show was going to get rolling. So again, any apologies for sound issues today, but hopefully we can get through this thing and we can talk about some White Sox baseball, because apparently our recording devices are about as good as they are here lately. But anywho, my name is Danny Miller. The gentleman to the right of your screen is the young strapping Jacob Thome. How you doing this week, Jacob?
Hanging in there. It's way too hot to be alive right now, but other than that, no complaints.
Yeah, I can't disagree with that. But yeah, man, we're looking at a little bit of cool off, including within the White Sox organization here as of late. I think the last time we've talked, since we talked, the Sox are 3-5. Because even though it's only been a week, they did have a doubleheader due to some rain in there against the old Redbirds over there in St. Louis. So, yeah, man. Pardon me. Things have been a little up and down as of late, and we have a few things to discuss. So I actually was on the road when we were texting earlier, because I went to Indiana this afternoon and spent way too much money on some pyrotechnics to celebrate all the White Sox home runs we're seeing this year. So
yeah, that's the reason.
Yeah, that's it. So anywho, man, you kicked us off with some pretty interesting topics to talk about tonight on that text thread. So I'm gonna turn it over to you. I'm gonna let you start things off. What direction would you like to take with the show this week, Jacob? How do you want to kick the show off?
I was thinking of a joke, but we'll just get right into it. Let's start off with what happened today. Luis Robert heads out of the game with hamstring tightness after homering yesterday. Another just unfortunate injury to the White Sox. Of course, obviously the hope is that it will be a short-term injury for Robert, but we thought we were on hug watch. It was just hamstring watch. So unfortunately, I believe he's day-to-day currently, which for the White Sox either means he's out for the year or he'll be in the starting lineup tomorrow.
Or, we get to watch another, month or so here before people start really getting hot and heavy on trades, which now I don't even know. Like, Luis Robert, who's shown off his speed on the base pass this year, when he does get on base, he's been pretty quick to take advantage of his speed and show off that he's healthy and, take an extra base here and there and steal a few bags. He's among the leaders in steals in the American League and in baseball this year. And, the big thing about some of these trade talks that have come up with him is that he looks like he's finally healthy, even if he's not swinging it the way that everybody knows he can and has shown that he can in the past. But this type of thing might actually hurt his chances of being traded, or at least the return that the White Sox can expect when we're looking at yet another hamstring issue, or at least what looks like a hamstring issue, in Luis Robert Jr.'s, I don't even know what you want to call it. It just added another tick against him in his history since starting in the major league. So, yeah, kind of disappointing to see that, you know, those kinds of things happen. Let's hope it doesn't linger for very long. I don't want to see him come back and spend the next month, looking like he did the season before last, where he was basically walking to first base on anything that wasn't hit in the air. And even when things were hitting air and in the gap, he wasn't really full out. So, yeah, man, not a good look. Not a good look. What do you think this does to his trade value,
if anything? Yeah, I mean, his trade value is always going to be weird. The good news is there's been reports that the White Sox are willing to include money to ship him off, as well as Andrew Benintendi, which is we heard kind of that in the offseason with the Reds, right? When it was a talk for, I believe it was Edwin Arroyo in the trade with the Reds. But the Reds wanted some money back. So if they're going to be able to, try to move him, I would assume that there is going to have to be money that is spent. But who knows? I mean, it's kind of an interesting thing because, you know, you have a guy who just 2 years ago was second in MVP voting, and now you have a guy who's been absolutely horrendous at the plate this year. He's starting to hang it up a little bit at the plate. Obviously, he homered yesterday. He had home run in the Blue Jays series. So he's homered twice since we talked last. But overall, disappointing is just the beginning word to describe Luis Robert's season so far. And I don't know how much the injury affects his trade value, because of kind of that's what Luis Robert is at this point. He's a guy who's dealt with injuries his entire career. And so it's not necessarily surprising to a new team to see him get injured.
Yeah. I mean, unfortunate doesn't go on far enough to describe how it is to see this kind of thing when you're at least hopeful, like we have been, that he stays healthy enough to get some value back. But disappointing is a good word, and you bring that up nicely. It's kind of been a disappointment. I know there's a lot of thought out there that Luis Robert Jr. could potentially move on to another ball club and quickly turn things around, just because there's thoughts that he doesn't want to play here anymore. New environment might bring him back around. And I think a lot of these teams that are, into talks for trading for him are either in need of someone who can potentially bring a big bat, or B, they're just, they're a little strapped in the outfield and they need bodies to fill those positions. And then they're hoping that, they can get the best out of them. But the general consensus is that there's a good chance he turns his career around after leaving the White Sox organization and finding new headspace and a new environment to kind of bring him back to where he should be. So, yeah, disappointing is a very good word. And, we hope the best for Luis wherever he ends up. But we hope the best that he gets back quickly enough so that, it would help us as White Sox fans to see, a somewhat decent return to keep this thing moving in the right direction. So, we'll keep a close eye on that. We'll talk about it again next week a little bit. I think we'll kind of table the trade talks a little bit this week because of it, just because we have no idea where this is going to go. This is, obviously only within the last couple hours here, and it's still pretty fresh. So we want to see, what kind of timetable he's on after getting a full evaluation, and see what the team comes out with. Our Chuck Garfine is usually pretty good about getting that stuff out there. If you're not paying attention to White Sox websites or, the White Sox Twitter account, because I know a lot of people have kind of muted that one. Hate to be the supposed possible intern that's running that account, who's getting crapped on every day by Sox fans. Like, you guys suck, and I don't want to hear it. Quit trying to be positive. Eh, they're just trying to do what they're supposed to do. So it is what it is. But, since we're talking about injuries and we're talking about Luis Robert in particular, the last couple of years, obviously, injuries have been something that we've been talking a lot about, especially since the exit of one Herm Schneider, who had one of the best runs in the history of baseball for injuries, and in the White Sox, you know, being fairly healthy, if not one of the healthiest teams in baseball for what seemed like decades. And, you know, recently, I don't know if you caught this, but just in the last couple of days, do you ever listen to or watch the Foul Territory podcast at all?
I see clips of it every once in a while. That is really my extent of tuning in.
I had not seen a full episode either, but I always like it when, you know, AJ's on a lot, right? AJ will jump on. Chris Braun will bring him in, and they'll talk about, you know, whatever it is. He's not necessarily on every single show, but he's on a lot. And recently, I don't know if you caught this, but they had ex-White Sox player Clint Frazier on the show just in the last few days. And I don't know if you caught any of that, but Clint Frazier had some things to say. He was on the show for, I don't know, close to a half an hour, I want to say, the other day. And one of the biggest things that they talked about is the stuff that's not really necessarily new to us as far as culture and clubhouse presence for this team, and kind of where it was in the dumps, and how Pedro Grifol was in over his head, and the organization as a whole was just not very good. You know, we heard some stories about how there were some veterans in the clubhouse that basically told Pedro Grifol to go F himself. And, like, you know, you had, you know, he wanted to talk about how he had control and about how the cliques were going away. And, you know, we're working on bringing everybody back together as a whole. And come to find out that those cliques were not only still there, they were stronger than ever. And there was a handful of veterans, one or two in particular, that were basically running the show in the clubhouse. And Pedro Grifol had zero hold on that. But now Clint Frazier's coming out and saying it was pretty well known that there were some guys on that team that faked injuries, and everybody knew it. Faked injuries just so that they didn't have to go be a part of what was going on out there. Pretty sure Eloy Jimenez was one of those guys. And, you know, Luis Robert Jr. was talked a little bit about. There were some whispers and rumblings and that. So what do you think about that? Do you think that that's something that could still possibly be going on inside this clubhouse with Will Venable under control? Has Will Venable gotten this team back, do you feel like? Is this a real thing with Luis Robert Jr. right now?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say. Obviously, Luis is the only guy left from that core, right, after they got rid of Andrew Vaughn, who notably had his own character issues that were well documented earlier in the year. But yeah, I mean, obviously you looked from afar and you could kind of see that, you know, the locker room was deteriorating. There was reports that year that Tim Anderson and Yasmani Grandal had gotten into a fight. You know, obviously there has been a lot of talk about Yoan and Eloy as two guys who could never stay healthy. Luis obviously had the same issues. He was able to put it together for 23, but that was about it. I'm not necessarily surprised. I mean, I think it makes sense looking from afar. I mean, you understand they lost 121 games last year. That is very hard to do, although the Rockies are going to do it once more. But, you know, it's tough to look at that and think, oh yeah, that's a guy who had complete control of the clubhouse, because there was legit talent there in some sense. I mean, in 24, they were 2 years away from being a 500 team, 3 years removed from being in the ALDS. So, you know, there was obviously some talent there. It quickly deteriorated as everybody went on the IL and such, but yeah, I mean, I have no reason to not believe the reports. You know, I remember him. He talked about, like, you know, the guy who told him to go F himself, I believe, was Yasmani Grandal. I believe that was kind of leaked out, but which doesn't surprise me. I mean, and it really felt like Jose Abreu was, like, the guy who kind of held with everything he could the clubhouse together, and then he left, and then last year it just completely fell apart. So not entirely surprised to see those reports come out. But I do think it's changed. I mean, you look at Will Venable, you look inside of the clubhouse, everybody's getting down the line hard. There's a bunch of baseball players who want to win. Unfortunately, they don't have the talent or the experience yet to win, but I think there's a complete change in their want and the trying ability of those players to win. And it's good to see some of the veterans, I think, as well. I mean, from what I've heard, Michael A. Taylor has been a very good guy to have in that clubhouse. Obviously, Martin Perez was a guy who was like, you know, I think we're going to be better than everybody thinks. He was a guy who wanted to win. You know, he had familiarity with Venable. So, you know, the veterans of the previous core are gone. And it's been more of a different group who has led the Sox team. And I think for the better, Will Venable has a better grasp on the locker room.
Yeah, and I probably should have prefaced that question a little bit better, because, you know, here's the thing. Like, I don't disagree with anything that you said. And the reason I asked that question is because, you know, as jaded as this Sox fan base has become over the last, you know, well, it's only gotten worse. It's been jaded for a while, but it's only gotten worse over the last few years. I believe some folks, especially after that report coming out from Clint Frazier that there were faked injuries, some folks are going to start questioning, you know, whether or not this one is a true injury. And I believe that I have to agree with you that, number one, it's been pretty obvious from the beginning. We've been saying that they're fun bad, that they're at least, because it's the heart that you see coming out, right? It's the want and the will to win. Whether or not they get it done on a daily basis, on a nightly basis, is a completely different question. Like you said, it's a question of talent and ability rather than, you know, heart. These guys obviously play hard game in and game out. They're busting it down the line over and over again. But I wanted to just throw it out there because as a fan base, I know people are going to – they're going to have questions. There's going to be that at least part of that fan base that is going to go – Luis Robert Jr. going down with this injury now is complete and utter BS. And I don't believe that's the case. I don't believe that Will Venable has lost the locker room at all. I don't believe that, you know, Andrew Vaughn's exit did anything to hurt the ball club in any way, shape, or form. I think it probably motivates some of the younger guys who want an opportunity to play to know that they don't have him there anymore. Now there's a handful of guys who can play first base, who probably should be getting some opportunities to play the first base position. You know, whether we go with the same guys who've been there in Andrew Vaughn's absence down in AAA before he got traded. You know, the Nodas, the Vargases, the Sosas, pretty much any of those guys that have been around, you know, in Andrew's time away. I believe are probably going to try to push to get as much playing time there as possible now that Andrew's gone. You know, Tim Elko, since he's gone back to AAA, is looking like, you know, maybe he's found another gear again. I would not be shocked to see him back up with the team at some point before the season's over. I'll be honest with you, I wasn't happy with him coming up, not getting a whole lot of playing time for guys who don't look like they're going to be part of the future. And at least, and I know you're an Elko hater, but I would at least like to showcase him a little bit to see what they could potentially get for him later on. But then again, maybe he's better off in AAA doing the things that he does down there where he's hitting monster bombs, even if it's, you know, with a high K rate. But you know, there's always teams out there looking for a guy who can put the ball over the wall. So yeah, I don't know, man. You hate to see the injuries, but you hope that the end result is a motivator for other people to, you know, kind of showcase their talents and their abilities, whether it's in the outfield or at the first base position. So I don't know. Anything else you want to add to that, bud?
I think that's about it. That was a good kind of all overview, right, of everything.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's move on. I know you have a few things that you wanted to talk about this week, so let's get them out in the open, man. Let's clear the air.
Yeah, let's get through it.
The air.
Let's get back to something we talked about earlier in the season. And that was the whole catcher debacle. What are they going to do when Caro and Teal are up? It has begun to rear its ugly head. It's really reared its ugly head in Texas, where we had a brief Kyle Teal outfield experience. And everyone went, oh, my God, it's Andrew Vaughn 2.0 or Gavin Sheets. You can pick what infielder you can – what former infield prospect they moved to the outfield. But anyway, I mean, there is a kind of concern because you have that situation where you have to put Teal out in left field. And now there's kind of seemed a fear almost by Will Venable to not want to play both catchers every day. And I want to kind of know your thoughts on, you know, what are their odds moving or what is the plan moving forward? Do they bring a guy like Corey Lee back up? Should they continue to do what they're doing, or should they make a move and just, you know, not be afraid of the outcome of potentially playing Caro and Teal in the same lineup every day?
My personal opinion on this is, I mean, I guess I could see a world where Corey Lee comes back. But I'm also of the thought that I would like to see Kyle Teal and Edgar Caro get as many at-bats as possible because the power potential really hasn't come out for either one of them yet, right? Both of them, you know, one more than the other, but both of them have some potential for some pop. And it's one of those things that you kind of hope see develop as they develop. And, you know, it's been said over and over again that development is not linear. And it doesn't stop once you make it to the MLB level. So I like the idea of actually playing both of them, whether one's the catcher and the other's the DH. And then, you know, if you have to do a double switch at some point in the game to make things work, to get, you know, to get through the game, you do that. But I'm also of the thought that, you know, with a team that doesn't have as much offensive output as you would like for an everyday MLB team, losing to DH isn't necessarily the worst thing in the world if you've got to take one of them out of a game and lose the DH position. And, you know, I don't honestly care if it's, you know, as long as we're getting through, like, let's say whoever the starter is that game before that happens, you get into the bullpen, let the bullpen guys hit if they have to, as pitchers, or, you know, do the double switch later on where you bring in a pinch hitter off the bench and then make the pitching change if you're in that position in that part of the lineup to be able to do that. I think you still need to get these guys as many at-bats as possible. The whole idea of not playing both of them regularly just doesn't sit well with me this early in their career. You know, there is still a lot of development that needs to be done and time that needs to be had for both of them. And the only way to do that is to keep them in the lineup as often as possible. And if you've got to play them both in the same lineup every day or, you know, most of the time, I'm pretty okay with that. I know some folks won't be. And then the other thing is I don't know if you caught Beef Loaf of the 108 the other day. He brought up that, you know, why not put one of them or both of them at the top of the lineup because they are putting bat on the ball and let them be table setters, take the pressure of the power off of them for now and let them just get on base as they can. And, you know, maybe things come along as they develop, but being at the top of the lineup gives them the opportunity to have the most at bats possible.
Yeah. So I wanted to bring this up because I'm of a different opinion, and that is that I think people need to understand, and not in that light, but I think there's a lot of people that are disappointed in the usage that they're getting, and that catchers normally get days off regularly as well. Like, I think it comes with a position. It's not like you're splitting time between two first basemen. I don't think this is like an Andrew Vaughn, Gavin Sheets situation where, you know, both guys are playing first base. Catcher normally gets the day off. It's kind of rare. I mean, the catcher who started the most games at the catcher position last year was Yadier Diaz of the Houston Astros. He only started 102 games at catcher. Now there are plenty of guys who have, you know, done the catcher DH route of, I think Salvi played 140 something games last year. But I think 90 of them were at the catcher position, and then the other 50 he played DH. So I mean, I think there's a world where you get to play both of them, but I'd also be interested to see if they bring Corey Lee up. I mean, that's kind of my opinion of if you're afraid of playing both of them in the same lineup because of what happened, why not bring Corey Lee up? Why? I mean, there's, it's not like you're hurting for people at this point. What does Corey Lee not do that like a Ryan Noda doesn't? I mean, I understand that Noda is playing first base currently, but you can't tell me that you couldn't play Corey Lee at first at this moment. I mean, or Vinny Capra, who we dragged enough in the last podcast. I'm not going to continue to drag him here. he's still there, by the way. He made it the whole week. You know, that'll be my hot take and heater next year, later in the podcast. Anyway, getting back on track. I mean, I just, Corey Lee is starting to hit the ball pretty well down in Charlotte. And I think there's, you have room, and Corey Lee's not that old. I mean, he's obviously a guy who debuted not that long ago. And he has had some success this year. He was just kind of forced because Kyle Teal forced their hand. But for a team that isn't set in stone and has room to kind of make some of these plays, I'd be really interested to see if they do bring Corey Lee up to kind of fill that third catcher spot. And then you feel more comfortable in playing Teal and Caro in the same lineup, catcher, DH, or maybe they flex one of them to getting some first base time, or if that's just Corey Lee's job. But yeah, I'll be kind of interested to see what happens going forward, because it clearly is an issue right now because they're just not playing regularly enough to see the right at bats to further their development.
Yeah, and I'm not against the idea of that either. I think that Corey Lee is probably going to be on the trade block coming up here shortly. Has he been, you know, stellar? Absolutely not. But he has been serviceable for most of his time up at the MLB level. There were some times last season, I mean, he came out pretty solid for a while where he was looking like he could be a stud. Obviously, that kind of tapered off. He came back down to earth, and he was just, you know, maybe barely an average catcher with an average bat at, you know, for the remainder of the season. Again, started out kind of quickly early on this year and then faded almost as quickly as he started. But I think that as loaded as the White Sox are at the catcher position, purposely so, I believe. I believe it was a big part of their offseason plan this year was to load up on catchers at all levels of the organization because, you know, when it does come time for baiting some trades, there are going to be teams that are looking for catchers. And I think, you know, that definitely puts them in a position to be able to talk to some of these teams because you have so many catchers. You loaded up on what it seemed like during the offseason. It was like every other day they were talking, oh, we added this catcher, we added that catcher. You know, it's all fun in games until somebody goes, hey, you know what? We need a catcher. Yeah. You know, we get bust on Getz and the White Sox all we want to about, you know, there were other needs at the time. But the reality is I think you can probably get some of those needs back once you trade some of these guys away, and they do hold value because it is a position that most teams, many teams, are always looking for. And there's always value in having a catcher, whether it's a defensive catcher or an offensive catcher or a little bit of both in between. So, yeah, I do see a world where it makes a lot of sense. And I do see a world where, in that case, you can start two of those guys, two of the three, almost every day, if not every day, whether it's catcher, DH, first base, and not have to worry about losing the DH spot if one of them goes down. So I don't know, man. It would be interesting. It's going to be interesting to see how they approach it. You bring up Vinny Capra. I would vote that he's the first one to go down.
Yeah.
In this situation, there's no need to keep this guy around. You know, they took a shot. They picked him up for nothing, basically. He's had his opportunity. He's not taking advantage of that opportunity. I personally feel like I don't think you need to be an expert to see that this guy's not going to be part of the future in any way, shape, or form. So what are we doing? Why is he here? There's no reason to wait it out too long to see if he somehow catches fire, which I don't see that happening. I don't think it was never really in his profile to be some stud. You know what I mean? He had some upside in his profile, sure, but really hasn't shown his head, shown his face in any way, shape, or form. And I don't know. I'm done. I'm good with carrying a third catcher.
Yeah, and that's my point as well. Is I think there's, you know, I get it. At a certain point, you want the extra middle infielder. But Vinny Kemper's not helping the future, where I feel like bringing up Corey Lee, too many Ks, is helping the future more than a Vinny Capra is. And I think the season's all about the future.
And that's it. I mean, and the other thing is, and we talked about this last week, again, I won't run over it too much, but when we talk about middle infield, you know, there are a handful of guys that show more potential that are already in the system before Vinny Capra ever even came over here. And I'd like to see, have some of those guys gotten opportunities? Sure. And have they taken full advantage of them? No. But they have definitely shown more than Vinny Capra ever has. And I don't understand why you take too much time to continue to look at a guy who just shows next to nothing. Is he a defensive glove? Sure. That's fine. But this is a team that struggles offensively on most nights. And, you know, we're losing games 10 to nothing, 10 to 1, 10 to 4. You know, you can put that on the pitching, but the reality is when you're only scoring 1, 2, 3 runs in a game, you're not going to win very many games that way. And Vinny Capra playing a solid shortstop is not going to really help them come about finding any other wins, you know, that are tucked away in there either. So, yeah, time to move on. But that's my 2 cents. I feel like I sound like an old man, but, you know, it is what it is, man. I've seen enough. Time to move on. Let's try something different.
Yeah, I'm 100% with you there. Let's transition, shall we?
Sure. What else you got for us this week?
Let's talk rotation. Davis Martin goes down with another injury. We're all hoping it's not Tommy John. Obviously, he's coming off of Tommy John, what, 2 years ago? He missed a ton of time with that surgery. But forearm tightness is never what you want to see, especially for a guy who was having a really good season. He was developing as a really strong number two for the Sox this year. And it seems like this keeps happening where they sign a pitcher and they finally think they have five, and then another one gets hurt. And then they're going back to the scrap heap. Luckily, the scrap heap has treated them pretty well and bringing them in Adrian Hauser, who's been fantastic, Savale with mixed results. But yeah, it's just another disappointing injury for the White Sox, who nothing new, but hopefully he's able to return soon.
Yeah, I'm with you 100%. Davis Martin's a guy, Ian and I talked about him before he actually got his opportunity to pitch for the White Sox at the MLB level, but he wasn't on a lot of people's radar until probably a month before he got called up. You know, he hadn't been talked about a whole lot, but if you watch as much minor leagues baseball as this future Sox crew does, you kind of saw something in this guy who you knew had a potential to be somebody, right? He had a potential to be a guy. And like you said, was shaping up to be a nice number two for this year, probably had some staying power in the rotation for, you know, the next couple of years if he didn't get traded away, which I know some folks thought that might be the case this year. Especially with, Hagen Smith and Noah Schultz probably pushing their way into the rotation full-time next year. Maybe one stays in the bullpen. We don't really know. But to see him go down, like you said, forearm tightness is always that one that makes you kind of just cringe a little bit because maybe it's nothing. But more often than not, it's something. and it's something that comes with a big price tag and time attached to it. So, again, hoping the best for that. We always loved us some Davis Martin here. But you brought up the scrap heap. And, you know, guys like Aaron Savali and, you know, Hauser. But there was another signing. I believe it was yesterday or the day before.
Yeah.
Very big name. Big, big, big name signing 5 years ago. Huge name.
Yeah.
Not so much the last couple of years. Another guy who's dealt with some injuries throughout his career, but has put up some monster numbers over that career. What do you think about the White Sox signing Noah Syndergaard?
I mean, it's a flyer, right? And we'll see what happens. I almost wonder if there's a chance he is transitioned into a reliever. You've seen this a lot of like former starters getting moved into the reliever roles. Cough, cough, the entire Cubs bullpen. Don't look at what Chris Flexen and Brad Keller are doing in that bullpen. It will make you quite sad. But yeah, I wonder if that's the plan. I mean, obviously, I don't know because they need a rotation guy. And Syndergaard, I think Chuck talked about this on yesterday's broadcast, but they kind of need a guy who's going to, you know, fill up some innings, but he's going to take a second because Banny wants to work with him. They want to shorten his pitch variety down to a couple pitches, which sounds like bullpen talk.
Well, that and like Syndergaard has been known to have like seven pitches in his arsenal.
Right. Right. So there's going to be some adjustments that are going to be made. I mean, we'll see what comes of it, but I really do wonder if the second half he gets moved into a bullpen role, or a long relief type of move. It doesn't work out for everybody, aka Mike Clevinger, who I don't think is done with the White Sox quite yet.
No, we might see him real, real soon here, actually.
Yeah.
Like, in fact, before the week is up, I'm thinking, possibly.
I think there's a good chance of it, unfortunately. But, yeah, we'll see. I mean, it's a flyer. It's a minor league deal. Who knows? But, yeah, I kind of wonder what the plan is with him. But, yeah, I'm going to go back to Clevinger real quick, who's having a really good last month in Charlotte. I would still like him to be very far away from my baseball team. He's been awful for the Sox this year. Obviously, he had that one, I believe, good year in 23. But, yeah, just a god-awful human being that I would like to not pitch for the White Sox. But he keeps ending up back in Chicago. And I actually think I mentioned this when he got sent down out of the bullpen, that I thought there was a good chance he came back as a starter later down the road, and sure enough, I'd be quite shocked if he wasn't in the rotation.
Yeah, so, you know, character aside, because I really don't like to get into those things. I mean, we know what we know through, you know, the more reputable outlets will give you the facts and nothing but the facts. And then you go on to the socials and it's like, people have insider stuff, and, you know, the people that were making allegations against them are also on social media saying things, and you know, you're hearing it from the horse's mouth. So I don't get into that kind of stuff because, you know, I like to keep it somewhat clean around here, and, you know, we can all have our opinions. But like I said, aside from his character, this guy has not been great for the White Sox the last couple of seasons. But at the same time, we kind of knew that he was still in the organization, and we were thinking, everybody and their brother has been thinking, that there's going to be at least a couple of pitchers traded out of this rotation. Minimum one, you know, was going to be traded out of the rotation. And we thought that maybe after the deadline, we'd see, you know, SP5 come back. But, it's looking now like maybe the White Sox hand might be forced to bring him back a little bit earlier than originally intended. So it is what it is. Somebody's got to eat those innings. We've got guys in the system that still need some development time, and I don't want to rush you know, said group of pitchers to come to the major league level if they don't need to be. So, you know, I hate to say it, but I think it's probably the best route for the team right now is to just bring this guy up and let him throw some innings. They've already got the black eye from, you know, re-signing him yet another time and continually giving someone with such a poor reputation chance after chance after chance. So that black guy's there. It's already been done. They haven't fired him. They haven't gotten him out of the organization as a whole. I think people just kind of forgotten about him because he's not with the MLB club. But, yeah, gentle reminder from your future Sox hot takes and heater hosts here. He's probably coming back real soon.
Yeah.
He's still there. So as unfortunate as it might be for some folks that want to, you know, watch or not watch him pitch on the south side again, be prepared. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's coming, and it's coming quick.
0.56 ERA in the month of June in Charlotte. So, I mean, there's recent success.
Not an easy place to pitch in, by the way.
No, not at all. So, I mean, I'm not saying he's going to be good. I'm just saying that is the reason that he would be brought up.
Yeah, it is what it is, man. It is what it is. I'm not going to say whether or not it's a good thing or a bad thing. I'm just going to say it's happening. It's yeah. The writing's on the wall. And if I'm wrong, hey, if we're both wrong, cool, great. Whatever. Maybe they decide to go a different direction. I don't really know. But I would guess that it's going to happen, and it's going to happen pretty soon. Pretty soon.
I agree with that one. Okay.
But, yeah, anywho, let's move on.
Do we want to talk about some bright spots? I feel like we've been pretty negative on today's show.
Yeah, let's do some of that.
Talking about Grant Taylor, who's having a fantastic start since coming up. Obviously, he had one minor bump, but since then, it's been fantastic for Grant Taylor. Allows one run today. That one was unearned, though. He's electric. I mean, he reminds me of, I mean, when we all saw it, it was like, all right, this is like a Crochet, Kopech type of guy, obviously with a right-handed arm, but he is really fun to watch. The stuff is electric. It moves in very interesting ways. And then he also throws, you know, 102 to go along with it. If you're the White Sox right now, is there kind of a thought where maybe we just keep this guy in the bullpen because he can throw 102? I mean, if he is an elite closer, which I'm not saying he is, he's got what, 5 innings pitched, if that. But they've been a pretty darn impressive 5 innings. If he becomes like a lockdown closer here, I think there's kind of a, all right, this was a second round pick. If we're getting a closer that we can trust for the next 10 plus years, and with him being in a closer role, you know, there's less injury concern because he's not going as far. He's not throwing as many innings, and it should be easier on the arm. Kind of what are your thoughts on maybe potentially him keeping in the bullpen?
Well, I mean, you know, when we first originally talked about it, when he was first brought up, you know, I was of the idea that maybe this is just a temporary spot, even though the White Sox kind of put it out there that we don't know. Like, we want to limit the injury possibility to him. We want to keep his innings down, at least for now. And they made it sound like, but when they said at least for now, they made it sound like they were thinking like beyond even this season, right? Or it sounded like it was going to go on for a season, 2, 3, and beyond that. Obviously, it's one of those things where it's kind of, let's watch, see, and evaluate, and we can circle back and you know, maybe make a decision on this later. But if he is doing what he has been doing and continues to do that to where he is, you know, a top 5 or 7 closer in all of baseball, I don't see any reason to move him out of that position and out of that role. It's something that we as White Sox fans have been kind of longing for a while. Obviously, we thought we had found a long-term closer when Liam Hendricks came here, and there was even talks that maybe he would extend. And unfortunately, you know, he had the bout with lymphoma, which, you know, thank God that, you know, he's gotten past that, he beat it. But by the time he came back, his contract has already been, you know, null and void, and was ready to move on. And, you know, his return wasn't exactly the greatest right off the bat. So, you know, we thought we'd found it, but we didn't. Before that, we went through a couple of guys who had been around for a long time. You know, we had the Johnny Cueto, who was throwing some closer innings for us. And oh, the other guy, the guy who was like 42, but also a great closer. Who am I missing out on? Right before Liam.
And I'm pulling every name that you're not thinking of. Like Gregory Santos is the name that's in my mind right now, and that's definitely not who you're thinking of.
Yeah. No. It doesn't matter. Either way, we had kind of gone through some closers that were good. They were serviceable. They were more than serviceable. They were better than league average. But if you've got a guy like Noah who can be well above league average, I don't necessarily see a reason why you don't just keep him there. He holds some pretty high value. Again, this is a, you know, bullpen in general is a pretty volatile position year over year. But if you've got a guy like him who can keep that focus and who obviously doesn't really fall to the pressure of that situation, because it is a high pressure, high leverage position that a lot of guys just can't handle, to be ready at a moment's notice and go out there and, you know, throw three or four outs in a game and just be ready and amped up every single time you're called upon. If you've got a guy that can do that, no reason to move him. It's not a position that a lot of guys find that they can hack that pressure. And as young as he is, to be able to handle it at that age, I think is something that's special.
Yeah, and the stat that kind of blows me away too is only one walk in 8 innings pitch. And we've seen the issues with the White Sox this year, especially the bullpen, of like just not being able to throw strikes. And, you know, there's a lot of guys, I shouldn't say a lot of guys, because there's really not, that can throw 102, but like he's able to control it really well. And the strikeout numbers haven't even been eye-popping. I mean, he struck out 8 in 8 innings, but the stuff has been extremely entertaining, to put a word to it. So I think the strikeouts are going to go up even. And then you have a guy who right now is getting it done through weak contact, which, hey, that'll work as well, an outs and out. But it's been really impressive. I think the one walk to me is just it's quite special to see a guy who's come into some pretty big leverage spots for the White Sox, and has really shut it down on the back end.
Yeah, agreed. It, you know, when he was drafted, he was thought that it was going to be, a one or a two in a rotation, and I think a lot of people have focused on that. You know, where he was drafted, why he was drafted, the idea of him being drafted, and the plan for him from day one was to be a top end of your starting rotation pitcher. And some folks have had a little bit of hard time. I mean, if you go on the socials, you see like, yeah, he's been awesome, but, you know, we need starting pitching. But the reality is we need bullpen.
Yeah.
We've got guys that can start. You've got one of the lowest payrolls in baseball. And when you get some of the money off of this books at the trade deadline, you're going to have even lower payroll. So, I would find it difficult to believe that if the Sox did need rotation help when they were ready to compete a little bit harder, a little bit stronger, and maybe even compete for a Central Division win, that they wouldn't go out and at least find – I'm not saying they're going to go out and sign some 6 or 7 year deal, because that's just not something the White Sox do. They don't give out long-term, you know, pitching contracts. But I would think that they would at least – find somebody to fill a third, fourth, or fifth spot you know, when you've hopefully you've got guys like Hagan Smith, and if Davis Martin comes back doing what he's doing, and Shane Smith, if he's not traded away at this deadline, which I think he will be. But, you know, and right now, difficult to say, you know, I think they could potentially keep him around for a little bit. He's still young enough to keep around for a couple of years. But then again, you know, you got to look at what the value that they're going to get coming back from him. And I mean, he's still pitching to a tune of like, what? He's like a 2.6 ERA or something like that. 2.58 or something. Last I looked, I want to say ERA.
Yeah. I mean, the wheels are, I believe, falling
apart last week where he gave up like 5 or 6 runs in the first 2 innings of the game. You know what I mean? It still was under a right about 2.5 ERA. Like, you know, I don't know. But the idea is you're going to have somewhere in this organization, you're going to have a pretty solid 1-2 punch.
Yeah.
So if, you know, if the idea is to keep Noah in a closer role, you can go out and find a 3 or a 4 somewhere else. You know what I mean? And not have to give him a 7-year contract with, you know, ultra dollars attached to it. So I don't see the reason why not.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think there's a, I think it's a weird situation for the White Sox and White Sox fans right now of like, all right, how is this going to work? Because I think it's hard. You kind of look at like every single level of the organization.
Noah, Grant Taylor, son of a gosh.
I think everybody knew it. What knew what you were talking about?
Yeah, I got Noah Schultz on the brain and Grant Taylor in the closer role.
But I think it's hard for some Sox fans to be like, all right, every single, you know, the pitching depth was insane last year, and everybody was praising Brian Bannister. And like this year, it doesn't look to be the same. Obviously, you can check out our future Sox channels for the guys who are showing up. But like the Sox also have like 8 guys now who are on the long-term IL with Tommy John. Like, I think people are forgetting that like this team also has Drew Thorpe, who was a top 30 prospect in baseball, who needed Tommy John. Obviously, the results weren't good for Thorpe last year, but you know, there's high prospect pedigree, and he's not a guy who I think could be a reliever. You know, you still have this core of guys, right? So, you know, obviously Shane Smith, we'll see what happens with him, but then you have Davis Martin. Then you also have Sean Burke, who pitched pretty well today, and Jonathan Cannon. Like, I think you're okay with those guys being back end of the rotation guys. And then you have a million bullpen options, obviously, who are down to Tommy John. I mean, Baroa, who was the team's closer last year's in Tommy John. So I think there's kind of a why, you know, I think there's a faulty look of this organization needs pitching from where it was last year, where you had all these guys who were performing and guys coming up. But really, I think people have forgotten about some of the names that are currently injured. I mean, Kai Bush is another guy who had a really good years in the minors last year. There's a ton of them. Corella is another guy, you know, heck, Blake Larson, who was their second round pick last year. So I think there's also that where like the Sox have enough pitching, and I think they might even go pitcher at 10 in this year's draft. But that's for another day. But I think that going back to the main point of like, if Grant Taylor is going to be an all-star level closer, and he's a guy that you can depend on late in games, I don't think there's a reason to move him out of that role just because you think you can get more value for him in a starting role.
Agreed. And I think, you know, when I think the whole reason I kept saying Noah is I was thinking about I brought up the top end of the rotation, and I'm still hoping that, you know, Hagan Smith and Noah Schultz can be the guys that are going to be at the top end of that rotation and, you know, showing us, exactly what it is that the White Sox pitching staff is all about and why everybody keeps talking about the future of the pitching staff. So, but yeah, Grant Taylor, there's no reason to move him. I don't think you guys shown the ability to do it. And I think you leave him out there until he shows that he can't.
Yeah.
And that's just that. It's all it comes down to for me. So, yeah, I mean, and you mentioned a lot of, there's a lot of names that yes, they're injured. Even if half of those guys don't come back to be what they were thought to be, there's enough there to believe that there's not only a full starting rotation within the organization already, But there's also a couple of guys that might even be able to transfer that into the bullpen. You might be able to take them and say, hey, we need a middle reliever that can eat innings, or we need a starter that can open up a game and take three or four, you know, solid innings where you're not expecting to get six or seven out of them. You know, seven is unheard of these days, it seems like, though. Yeah. You know, unless a guy is like on cruise control and he's at 65, 70 pitches in the sixth inning, of course you're going to put him out there for another inning. But the reality is baseball's gone away from, you know, how many guys throw complete games these days?
Right.
It's next to nothing. When, you know, just 20 years ago, you would hear about your starters having five or six complete games in a season. And now it almost never happens. Unless, again, you know, you got a guy who's going for no hitter. And I've even seen a couple of guys going for no hitters that, you know, they hit the 85 pitch mark in the seventh inning and they're going, maybe we should bring in the setup guy in the closer.
Yeah.
In the middle of a no hitter, you know, it's ridiculous. So, yeah.
Combine no hitters. Go ahead.
What's that?
Oh, I was going to say combined no hitters, I feel like, are kind of a newer thing. It's happening more and more often where, like, guys are just getting pulled in the seventh inning with a no hitter, which seems insane, but it's all about the back end metric.
It's less of a shining stat, obviously, than the no hitter. But, you know, the reality is pitchers just don't go as far as they used to. You know, they're throwing different pitches. They've got new grips. The spin rates are, you know, insane. And it's just part of the, you know, the injuries as well, too. You see the injuries piling up and guys going for TJ. There's more and more Tommy Johns than you have ever seen. And they just seem to continue to grow every year. And it's because of these new pitches they're throwing and new grips and the spin rates just being absolutely insane. You know, I hear some of the old school baseball purists come out and talk about, well, you know, guys back in my day were throwing 100 miles an hour and they would throw three games a week. Yeah. Were they throwing curveballs with, you know, spin rates that are, you know, astronomical? Absolutely not. I'm sorry, they weren't. It's not the same. So, you know, it's just the world we live in right now. And, you know, again, I think the main thing is the White Sox have a stockpile of really good pitching up and down the system. And I believe, like you said, is with the drafts continuing and, you know, whether it's the regular draft or you get Rule 5, you get compensation picks, the focus is always going to be on pitching for this White Sox team. Of course, obviously, if there's a hands down, no nothing, you know, we got a bat that we have to take out there, they will. But I think as long as the regime that's currently in place is there, the focus is going to remain on pitching. You're going to have to buy a bat somewhere.
Yeah.
We can't develop them.
You know, they're starting to a little bit.
Here and there. We'll see. Here and there. And I think that's a work in progress. And we'll probably see that to continue to progress over the next couple of years with new technology. And you know, we talked a little bit about this, about not being able to take some of that technology on the road with you and the difference between offensive output at home and offensive output on the road. It shows, but, you know, hopefully that starts to carry over into the road games as we go on and as guys get more comfortable with the use of these things. And then, you know, of course, with new coaching staff and new people and positions in the minor league system as well, I think there's a chance they do develop. But, you know, we're pretty close to the hour mark here. I think we've hit all the topics that we wanted to talk about today, unless you got something else. I think this is probably a pretty good time to transition to some hot takes and heaters.
Agree.
And I think I'm actually going to take my hot take and turn it into a cold, you know, absolutely freezing take. Since we're talking about developing and not being able to develop hitters, and, you know, no news here, nothing crazy big, but, you know, after seemingly turning things around for a short time, Colson Montgomery is back on the, he might as well be on the Antarctic. He is frozen. He's hitting a solid nothing here lately. And, you know, I've said it before and I'll say it again. He's still fairly young, still got some time to turn it around. And maybe if the right people work with him, he can get some confidence back, get his swing back together. It doesn't seem like it's been the same since the injury, you know, last year. And, you know, quite frankly, the people will say that the White Sox just can't develop hitting and maybe he's hit his ceiling. I don't want to necessarily believe that as of yet, but right now he looks awful. I'm hoping he turns it around. So
yeah, it has not been a pretty look for a guy who I think, you know, you wanted to give the starting shortstop role. I think there was kind of the expectation that he was going to be the starting shortstop out of camp. And it just hasn't been able to find it. So it's been a disappointing year for sure for him. And I think, you know, I go back to it, like back injuries are tough. Like it messes with everything. Like there's, I mean, Johan, you could say what you want to say about Johan, but I think the back stuff hurt him. There's a lot of guys who have been really, really hurt by back injuries. And they're just really tough because of how much you use your back to swing. And so we'll see if he's able to come alive here for a stretch or if it's kind of just a unfortunate circumstance going forward.
Yeah. And part of me wants to say, like, put the kid on the shelf for a while and let him take his mind off the field altogether, work on that swing. Cause I said it early in the season and it was like, it was weird. Like within a week of me saying it, you know, I said I'd been watching some film and how his swing was kind of extra long. And then it came out that people in the White Sox staff saw the same thing. His swing's a little long and we need to work on his swing mechanics and get him back into his groove. And it felt like maybe that was starting to happen. And it seems to have gotten long again. And there's like a wonky little hitch to it too, which I've noticed lately that I wasn't seeing before. That makes me think there is some kind of tweak going on in that back right now. It just, there's something in his swing mechanics that just looks a little weird to me. A guy who had, in my opinion, 2-3 years ago, one of the best looking swings I had seen in a long time in the organization, doesn't look great right now. Yeah. And I don't know if that's a result of them maybe trying to tweak things mid-season, which is difficult in itself because you're trying to break bad habits while being right in the middle of those bad habits. Kind of a tough thing to do. So I don't know if it's that or if it's the injury, but you know, like I said, I still have hope that it comes back around, but right now it's not looking so hot. So what do you got for hot takes and haters, Jacob?
Ooh, hot take. What's my hot take? Right now I have
my baby just came and jumped on and knocked my computer all over, so sorry. Nugget wanted to make an appearance tonight. Say hi to the people, Nuggy. Hi.
My hot take is I have more trust in the bullpen than I have in a long time for the White Sox. I really do like, obviously having a guy like Grant Taylor to lock down the back end is important, but like Weekelman, I think has been somewhat interesting to watch. It'll be fun to see how he develops if they keep him up. Some of the guys coming back, Steven Wilson's had a bounce back year. I think he could be traded. There's more confidence in the back end of the bullpen. Fortunately, the offense has fallen apart and the rotation is getting there because of injuries. But bright spot is I think the bullpen's a little bit better than it has been in a while.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Well, unless you have anything else, I fear Nugget here is needing her daddy for other things other than to just sit in his lap. She's trying to get my attention for something. So I guess we'll wrap it up here tonight.
You have anything well, wouldn't you want be, to add? Wouldn't be proper without a Lenin Sosa shout out.
Always got to give. I mean, the guy's, you know, he's solid. Superstar, not yet. But I have faith. I have faith. I'm waiting for like a midsummer, all of a sudden out of nowhere, just massive power surge where he comes out for a couple weeks and just, I don't know, hits like 10 dingers between now and,
yeah,
and the trade deadline.
Don't say that because then I'll be traded. Although I wouldn't hate that.
Yeah. All right.
Anyway.
Okay. Post trade deadline comes out and just finds a power stroke all of a sudden. I don't know. We'll see. Anywho. I think that's a wrap, unless you got anything you want to add.
No, I think that's it.
All right, buddy. Well, As always, it has been a pleasure chatting with you. It is like therapy to sit here and talk White Sox baseball. As always, again, thank you to all our chatters for checking in. If you're listening to us live or recorded, if you're watching us on YouTube or the Purple app, go ahead and smash that like button, hit the bell for notifications so that you know exactly when and where we are coming on. And you can be part of that live chat as well. If you really like the content, super chats are open during any of our live shows, including James and Ian on the Future Sox podcast, as well as Elijah, Jeff, and Dylan Natsis, Dylan Barnes, who has been doing more and more time on the Future Sox roundup. Super chats are open there as well. If you like our written content, you can find that at www.futuresox.net. And if you like the exclusive stuff, you can find that behind a $2 Patreon paywall, $2 a month. You can get all of our exclusive write-ups. As I've said last week, currently we have a ton of draft profiles coming out. You guys should go check those out. If you're into prospect highlight videos, you can find that here on YouTube as well as on our Twitter X channel. That's X at Future Sox. For my co-host, Jacob Thome, hit JThome21 on X. I am Danny Miller at Danny Miller FS on X. Thanks for coming and checking us out. Like I said, we appreciate all of you. Like, subscribe. Donate, don't donate, doesn't matter. Just come check in with us. And as always, till next time, go White Sox.
Looking to get the most out of your money, time, and even better, your points and miles? I'm Chris Hutchins. I'm a lifelong optimizer, and I've sold 2 companies, racked up millions of points, and traveled the world to over 60 countries almost always for free. And I host All the Hacks, an award-winning podcast trusted by more than 1 million listeners that turns big ideas into quick tactical moves you can start using today to upgrade your life, money, and travel. Recent episodes have covered how to book business class seats for economy prices, how to make an easy $3,000 a month from online deals, and tiny habits that you can use to buy back hours of your time each week. There's no fluff in the show. It's just proven playbooks to travel better, spend smarter, and design a life you're excited about. So search All the Hacks, that's All the Hacks, in your podcast app, hit follow, and start upgrading your life today.